Hello, welcome to the English program. Well, as a massive fan of Harry Potter, and quite frankly, anything at all to do with Harry Potter, the books, the films, anything at all, we simply cannot get enough of them. Can we, Pilar? No, we cannot. So we are doing now a little program as part of our Open Courseware project. And we found some materials here on the Open University's Open Learn website, open.ac.uk. An article here written by Dr. Mark Banks of the Open University entitled Wizards Are People Too, The Sociology of Harry Potter. This is being made available, this material, under something called a Creative Commons license. Your comments, thoughts, views and suggestions, as always, can be sent via our Twitter page, if you wish, twitter.com/EnglishRadio. Okay, well, as the Harry Potter movie franchise releases its penultimate offering, critics and commentators have started to prepare. This was written just before Christmas, 17th of November to be precise, 2010. Critics and commentators have started to prepare their retrospective reflections on the social impacts of J.K. Rowling's Boy Wizard. While millions of young and old people as well, don't forget this, is, you know, people of all ages love Harry Potter. This isn't just young people. Young people, yes, but older people, people my age, people older than myself, love Harry Potter. This is something which appeals to everybody of all ages. Anyway, these people have enthusiastically read the books, watched the movies, and consumed the spin-off merchandise. What might they have learned in doing so? Well, with the release of the penultimate Harry Potter installment, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Dr. Mark Banks of the Open University has written an article to explain why the films are an ideal lens through which to view the relationships between people and society, and asks the question, what have we learned from the story so far? From a sociological perspective, we can see that the Potter series is full of rich delights. It tells us much about family, with Harry's search for his parents and encounters with various other parental figures being central to the narrative. It also tells us about identity, as Harry strives to establish his own sense of who he is, as well as those old sociological favourites of class, gender and ethnicity. I remember doing sociology GCSE in school, and yes, we covered those very same topics. They're always relevant to these sorts of discussions. Not only is the world of magic strongly classified, think how the Malfoys aristocratic... I met him. I met Lucius Malfoy, Jason Isaacs. I worked with him for a week. I did, you know, I did, on the El Escorial conspiracy. Watch it if you can. La Conjura del Escorial. He's in it, and I'm in it at the very end, dressed as an Inquisition guard, all in black, with a very heavy sword. I'm the one who bashes open the doors at the end. Watch it carefully. So, yes, I've met him. So, sorry, Pilar, my producer is looking at me. Steve, what are you talking about? Getting off topic here, I think. So think how the Malfoys' aristocratic bearing is contrasted with the lowly position of the Weasleys, but it is marked by a rather conventional notion of gender politics. Now, with no end to the patriarchal and matriarchal figures, only Hermione... Is that how you say it? Hermione? That's how I say it, anyway. Representing something of a rebellious tomboy, distinguishing her from the wives and mothers and the important distinctions in the narrative between muggles and non-muggles. Purebloods and half-bloods are indicative of the ways in which racial discrimination flourishes even in enchanted worlds. We also learn much about the management and organization of bureaucracy in the form of the Ministry of Magic, the iniquities of the criminal justice system, and the importance of ethics, norms, and values in reproducing societies, and not just in terms of the age-old clash between good and evil. We will continue with this series in episode 2. You are listening to the English program. Thanks for listening.